I'm Testes.
I'm Testes, the god of test.
On that note,
say hello to Testes.
Testicles.
What should I do and how should I do it? I got a problem and I gotta get through it. Who should I talk to? Who should I see? What book should I check out of the library? Yeah, but I don't read, so I watch some TV. I see what Hulu has to offer me. I got Netflix and Amazon Prime. I got more options than I got time. I just need a little distraction to keep my mind off my lack of action. I just need a little TV so I can forget completely. Forget completely.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Life's a Binge. I am Jared.
I'm BJ.
I'm Rich.
And we want to thank everyone out there for listening to our show. Yeah. And you can follow us on all social media at Life's a Binge. That's across all social media platforms. Just check us out. Find us at Life's a Binge, wherever you are using your cellular device.
Or your computer.
Or your computer. Well, I guess. What can you... Facebook?
What's that?
You can't post anything to Instagram from your computer.
But no, you can look at it.
You remember me doing that?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Trying desperately.
You were like, how do you post it?
I was like, Instagram sucks. Post.
And I was explaining it exactly how you do it. And he's like, no, but how? And I was like, I just told you how. And then he finally says, like, no, from the computer. And I was like, you can't. Yes. But I was like,
fuck Instagram.
I think you can finally like use third-party apps to schedule stuff. Like if you're using like Hootsuite or something like that. You can schedule posts to it, but not, you can't just post.
Like the old TweetDeck days.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
Good times. So yeah, if you're on your computer, check us out at Life's a Binge. Or if you're at your computer right now, just type in www.patreon.com/Life's a Binge.
You mean the money.
And you can help us out financially, become a subscriber of the show.
Do it.
Or if you're feeling very generous, you could become a producer like Big Daddy Moneybags, a.k.a. Tony and La Mesa, or Todd Leroux, or Jess Jansen, or my mother, Kathy Weintraub, who said she really liked her shout out last week.
Except for when I dripped
into that hello, mother, whatever I was doing last week.
It's kind of a Silence of the Lambsy.
Kind of. I don't know where the inspiration came from.
I say my mom's
from.
Name is also Kathy.
Oh, nice.
Actually, it's Kathleen. If you call her Kathy, she will murder you with eyes.
My mom's name is Catherine, but she's been Kathy, Kathy her whole life.
Yeah. My mom is not a fan of Kathy.
Are you Richard or are you Rich?
I am Richard.
But you're Rich?
I'm Rich.
Do people call you Richard?
I'm Rich.
My mom calls me Richard, and there are certain friends who it doesn't sound weird coming from.
Right.
But for most people, like if they say Richard, I'm like, ah.
And BJ, how long have you been BJ?
Forever. Well, but I've had a old girlfriend call me Benjamin.
Love the name Benjamin.
Benjamin's a great
good name.
It is probably one of my favorite names for a male.
It is, and it's presidential.
You've never been Ben, Benny,
in
Benji,
high school, you know, everyone's got like names for you. So that friends would call me Benny or, you know, none of them would say Benjamin. And I was never like.
Always been BJ.
Always been BJ.
Huh.
Yeah. And then if I ask my folks where that come from, they're like, I don't know.
What's the middle name?
William with a W.
Wait.
William.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Your name is Benjamin William Lawrence?
Yes.
That's what? Cool.
Wait.
And so, yeah, so people
so
say
comes
William.
From Ben
and I was like,
Jammin?
It's William with a J.
Like,
it's like Juan.
BJ is Quilly just Jammin. Benjamin broken up.
Benjamin.
Yes. Yep. Now I had a Jewish
That's
friend
bizarre.
When I was little.
That's
his name Yamin. And so, like, in Hebrew, it's Benyamin, which is son of Yamin. And so, apparently my dad had a friend named BJ that he does not remember. My mom says, your dad had a friend. Like, that's what she always said. Because I was like, how did I get BJ?
Right. From BW.
Yeah. From Benjamin. Yeah.
Because normally, it's like Brian, John.
Exactly.
McEvely.
Right.
That's how he got BJ because it's Brian
now,
John.
Have you noticed he's not going by BJ?
He's Brian McEvely. Yeah.
I wonder what's up with that.
He's professional now.
He's trying to distance himself from you.
Maybe so.
He just didn't want to be evil BJ anymore.
You're right. He's like, I'm sick of this bullshit.
Did you ever try to go by nickname, Jared?
No. People tried to call me JJ. because my name is Jared Jerome. And they were like, ooh, Jared Jerome, huh, JJ? And I was like, never in my life ever.
Why would I would never go by two initials.
I know a JJ. You're not a JJ.
No. People call me Jerry just because they hear me mispronounce my name.
Jerry.
I'm like, I'm Jared. And they go, hey, Jerry. And then I just go, yeah, okay, that's fine. But Jerry was my grandpa whose name was Jerome, but he went by Jerry, which I'm like, how do you get Jerry from Jerome? But
it's
no,
Jerry Seinfeld.
Never had a nickname or a shortened version of my name, which I'm thankful for. Because Samantha gets called Sam all the time, and she doesn't mind it,
but not her
mom hates when people call her Sam.
Really?
She's like, I named her Samantha. I'm like, well.
Interesting.
My sister Valerie, let
Val.
It be known.
Interesting. Ooh.
No, Val.
No,
go on, Val.
No.
V? Okay. What about V?
I'm sure she doesn't like that either. But she doesn't, yeah. We didn't find out for a long time. And she's like, I don't like Val. When people call me Val, it makes me sick.
And you're like, what?
And like, I'm like, we've been calling you Val your whole life. Yeah.
That's funny.
I always said mostly Valerie, but right. Sometimes, like, you know.
Well, it's funny because my brother is named Jacob, and his whole life, everyone's always called him Jacob.
Jake.
And then when he got his new job at the new office, they started calling him Jake just there. And so now everyone at his work calls him Jake. And his wife, who he met at work, calls him Jake, and she's the only one in the whole family to call him Jake.
That's
and I'm
cool.
Like,
that's cool, though.
I'm like, it's kind of weird that you're Jake because you're Jacob.
It's just their thing. That's
right.
Cute. I think it's cute.
Yeah.
I think it's cute.
But anyway, I
thought you were
going to
say that, like, somebody like, oh, you know what? We're going to call you this, you know, which there are some kind of environments where people are like, we're going to call you, you know.
Shithead.
Yeah.
My family
How do you like that?
My family has like a baby nickname that they still call me, which I will not repeat on air here.
Yeah.
Maybe someday.
Oh, I have those. Like, my dad called me
Richie
Boo-Boo.
Poo. Richie Poo.
No, like,
my dad called me Boo-Boo when
it makes
I was
no
a kid.
Sense.
Okay.
Well, see, yeah, and me either.
It never makes
my
sense.
Other nickname from my dad was Perp because Jacob was Pake with a P. He was Pap with a P. Josh was Poshman with a P. And Jared with a P doesn't make any sense, so it was Perp instead.
All right.
So there was Pake, Posh, and Perp.
There you go.
That's crazy. But that's what's great about family and
nicknames.
Nicknames.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And people are like, how do you spell that? And we're always like, P-E-R-P, I guess?
I was thinking, yeah, P- yeah,
you
P-
are
P-E-A-R-P.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like pair with a P. It's Perp.
Yeah.
But my friend, we're for tangent train all
Oh, yeah.
All
we haven't even started the show yet. So.
But his name is Max. But for whatever reason.
Maxwell?
Maxwell. I think it was Maxwell.
Yeah.
Maximilian?
Or maybe Maximilian. I think it was Maxwell. But for whatever reason, like, I would call him Jumaine.
Maximus.
So
Jumaine?
Jumaine. J-U-M-A-N. Because there was a player named Trumaine something that he
sure.
liked. And also,
is
he
Jewish?
Was,
and he was Jewish.
No, and he was notoriously stingy, though. And so, like,
wow.
And so,
not better.
This is 30 years ago when we didn't care about those things.
Wow.
So we would.
Wow. Jews too, BJ. Jew too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, say the whole word. You say the whole word. Jewish. Yeah,
Jewish. Say Jewish. That is like our word.
It's a funny thing. It's a funny thing.
Good times. Good times.
Let's start the show.
Yeah,
man.
Let's go ahead and take a big breath right now.
Life's a binge.
Right?
What's up?
What's up?
What's
up? Is he licking his foot?
He's trying to.
Good thing I put a Band-Aid on it, because he's trying to lick it. Speaking of that, that's Trevor that I'm talking of. He ripped his dew claw. So Trevor is special.
Yeah.
As we've said before. And he loves water more than anything. So you turn on the hose, he'll try and eat the water coming out of the hose and will not stop. And so with the pool there,
oh boy.
Getting in the pool, all he wants to do is get in the pool and swim, 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 swim.
Cute.
And while he's swimming, he like gulps water. And he will he'll just drink it. Drink. And that happened to him when he was a puppy. So much in fact, he like basically put a rock in his gut and like his brain swole and all this stuff. Anyway, so he has a problem with water. He's fine as long as you supervise him or whatever.
Okay.
However, we were like, let's do this more often so he gets more used to it. Put him in the water so he doesn't freak out so much.
So it's not a crazy big deal.
Right. Put him in the water. We've been doing that. And then, yeah, took him out of the pool. And he came running to jump back in. And it's a little too tall for him. And so he's jumping up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And at some point in, during that crazy going psycho process, he ripped his dew claw, which is, I guess, closest thing would be like a dog's thumbnail. It's like the
more
one that's higher up on their ankle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he had to go to the vet and they had to chop it off.
So there's no more claw there?
It'll come back.
It'll grow back.
But it's a $400.
Aren't pets just the best?
And so while we're not here, he has to wear a cone, and then he should be wearing a cone anyway, but I hate when he's wearing a cone because he can't get in out of the doggy door, can't drink water and all that stuff. So when I get home, I bandage his leg up, but then he thinks he can lick it, and so he licks the bandage. And sometimes he's successful enough to lick the bandage. It's like an ace bandage. It's not like a adhesive. But anyway, he can, like, get in there, and I'm like, damn it, you're ruining everything. Like, I'm doing this for your
own
good.
I'm trying to help you out. Like, you have to be a sad cone dog.
Yeah.
And you know Frank teases him.
Yeah, of
course. Coney.
What's up, Coney?
Coney Island.
Cone face.
That's funny. So, yeah. Loving the pool, but, yeah, Trevor ripped his hand off trying to get in there.
That pool looks refreshing. Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's good. The perfect size.
Right on.
It's
and you're digging it?
Great.
Right on. Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's what's up with me. Oh, yeah. And I didn't see Book of Mormon. That's also what's up with me. BJ, what'd you do?
Ooh, I did see Book of Mormon. It was great.
Was it special?
It was so special.
More on that later.
Was it amazing?
Yes.
We have a very special Phone Army segment dealing with that coming up soon.
But same old stuff. Busy summertime.
Work.
Busy zoo.
Yeah.
Yep. And today was a day. Was SeaWorld, and then WEG shows, and
nice.
then Koalafornia Boardwalk.
Oh yeah,
which is the name of the beer garden.
I did that. But when they first did Koalafornia, I was an announcer standing on the roof of the ticket booth. Yeah, that was years ago.
It's the same stage, I bet.
I was on the roof of the ticket booth.
The roof.
Like. Where you enter the zoo, I was on the roof
of
those buildings.
See, I don't remember you working at the zoo ever.
Well, I did.
Before you worked at SeaWorld?
Well, BJ doesn't remember.
Do you remember when the show Talamasca was there?
Nope.
See, I was there for that show, too.
Right on.
Me and Court Norby. But yeah, I would stand on the roof and be like, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world-famous San Diego Zoo. Today, you're going to experience whatever, blah, 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 blah. And one of the words I remember is Koalafornia, because koalas are my favorite animal on the planet.
Really?
It took a while for me to get that down.
Danger bears. At one time, I said koalafornication, and that was not right.
Stacey Eek said, you're out.
Because,
and that's why I'm not at the zoo anymore.
No one noticed.
Once
I noticed, but
done.
No one else did.
Yep.
You're done in this town.
Yeah, I played Creep, and they said, don't play Creep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's fun being at the new spot over by Koalas?
It's great. Yeah, it's great. And we had so they have Cornhole and Jenga set up on the outside tables. And,
nice.
And so,
when I think San Diego Zoo, I think Cornhole and Jenga.
Yep.
Yeah.
And beer, and a beer garden.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yep. Yeah.
How long is the beer garden there? Is it a special thing on the weekend?
No, or I should say there's a bar there.
Oh.
But they call it the beer garden. So
is it a garden?
You know, there's lots of greenery at the zoo. So
true.
Yes.
So that's like if you're the koala, if you're standing on the path and the koalas are on the left, is that little building, little area on the right-hand side?
All right, when you come into the zoo, you take a hard right to get to the koalas.
Yep.
And if you keep going, you stand
on the
that same
side.
Path. It's on the right, yeah.
Right past, like, the wombats and Tasmanian devil and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know.
You work there, dude. How do I know it better than you?
Because I go in the volunteer gate.
The one thing.
What if people ask,
yeah,
hey, there's koalas here. They're from Australia.
Yeah.
Where's the wombats? Aren't those Australian as well?
That's why. No, because I'm singing the whole time. I'm like, I can't.
I don't know where the wombats are.
I'm in the middle of a song. So
go ask somebody wearing a tan shirt.
When we were playing up at the Elephant Odyssey Plaza, like, you could tell people wanted to, like, ask me where something was. If they asked me where the bathroom was, I'd be like, solid, right over here.
I got you.
I know where that one is. I used it 5 minutes ago.
But, yeah.
Remember when I said I broke a string? I was dropping a deuce.
I think that all the time, though, like, because, like, at SeaWorld, I'm like, every time I'm in the park, wherever, even if I'm not working, you need help finding anything? Can I help you find anything? And some people are like, why are you?
Who are you, weirdo, in a t-shirt?
Well, sometimes even like, because I don't wear a name tag, because when you're on the stage, you can't have it. So So, but I'll, if they hadn't seen the show yet, they, you know, if they see the show, they're like, hey, you're the guy, you're the guy. But if they don't, they're like, why is this weird dude in a Hawaiian outfit and puka shells?
Ask you have to wear puka shells?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
He doesn't have to. He chooses.
I choose to. Okay. If you have an opportunity to wear puka shells, you say yes.
It's not 1994 anymore.
I was going to say.
Dude, puka shells never go out of style.
My girlfriend bought me those like freshman year of college. And I'm like, I'm not going to wear those.
Thank you.
She was mad.
Let's see. I went from puka shells to like the big metal ball snap together necklace. I had one of those. You know, like the chain that's on the lamp there,
yeah.
But the big version of those.
Okay,
yeah, I wore one of those for a while too.
Right on.
I was cool.
Yeah, you were.
It was the times, man.
1990s, baby. What's up with you, Rich?
Man, I had a weekend.
Uh-oh.
I mean, we all had a weekend, but I
had a good weekend.
So Friday was actually really cool. It was a conference for it's called GopherCon, which is a very different convention than Comic-Con, even though it was downtown at the Marriott Marquis.
Nice.
You had to go for it.
Yes.
That con.
There you go.
Go for that con.
Good job, PJ.
See what I did. Thank you. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Go
that's good. I was going to cricket you, but that's good. That's good.
Go is a coding language, so it was a programmers and coders conference. And the guy who like owns the studio, because I was a contracted job out through this other studio, and him and the other shooter are just like totally not on board with like computer like geekery and like all that stuff. For me, it was kind of interesting, you know, for an hour. But I was there for 10 hours. I was there for 10 hours on Friday covering various things. And then they had like a 1 hour like after party thing. But it was all very chill, like super easy. Like a conference gig is, you know, get a couple shots of each speaker as they go up. And how many times can you really do that? Like I'll look like I'm still working, but mm-hmm. I take a few good ones and I'm like, all right, we're done. And I'm sitting around for like 10 minutes at a time. Saturday was the complete opposite of that. Saturday was a much shorter wedding shoot. It was a destination wedding. It was a family, two families from New Jersey, and they brought New Jersey with them.
Oh,
like they. This is the most, and I don't. I try to not stereotype people as much as possible. But
have you seen Jersey Shore?
Bro, like some of these guys could have easily just walked right off the set of that show.
They did.
And they were all very nice people, just super Jersey, super East Coast, and kind of checked out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to repeat myself, I don't know, over and over. We got to one point, and there's a lot.
Like, and this is during like the formals, obviously. Then
right. Yeah. So they had a 22-person bridal party.
What?
11 bridesmaids and 11 groomsmen.
Come on.
Which at that point I'm just like, you're just greedy. Like you can't decide who you want in the party. So it's like, all my friends are gonna be in the party.
Yep.
I had four. We had four.
I'm gonna have five. Yeah. Which, and to me, five is like five the max. That's the max. Yep. It's the absolute max.
Wow.
And it was tough. And the families were. Like, you know, once cocktails start coming out, it's kind of hard to get people to do anything.
Truth.
And I try and tell, if I'm the person who's sitting down with a couple beforehand, I try and tell them, I was like, look, if you can, whether it's at the rehearsal dinner or in an email beforehand, tell everyone that you want to have informal pictures that they have to be in a certain place at a certain time. And tell them twice. Tell them three times. Tell them four times. Tell them the day
mm-hmm.
of. Because once the party starts, they're going to want to go off and do the party.
Mm-hmm.
I told the father of the bride at this wedding three times. So, hey, Fernando, we're going to need you down past the ceremony site so we can do family pictures. He goes, oh, okay. He would just turn around and just not do it. And I finally got on the microphone. Excuse me. If you are family, if you are a family member, if you're part of the, I won't say their last names, but the, we'll say very non-East Coast names.
The situation.
The Cooper and the Smith family. If you're
the Pauly D family.
Please go down to the ceremony site. Nobody would move.
If you're a part of the Gaglione
crew. Once again. And I was the second photographer, so I was kind of like, the pressure wasn't really on me to like handle everything.
I can feel the stress right now.
But at one point, the other photographer, she looks back, she looks at me, she goes, help. Just in like the most earnest, like big-eyed, like please save me kind of way.
Okay, listen.
Yeah, that's what happened after that. I had to like, all right, I don't want to. If I'm not the main guy, I don't want to, you know,
right.
I don't want to take over and be the guy. Right. I don't want to step on toes. But it came to that where I had to like, all right, like everybody, we got into this and like clapping, like snapping and just like pointing.
Stepping go, on go. Toes.
It was.
I'll be that guy for a moment.
And then to top it off, like because it took so long to do everything, we were like 2 hours behind.
Losing light.
So everything. I was there 2 hours longer than I was supposed to be.
Boo.
And I did not get to go out to dinner with my friends, which I really wanted to
Boo.
Do.
Boo.
But
boo.
So it goes. That's what happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good.
So it's tough, but
times.
I got paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paid is good.
I think that's anything else? No?
That's what's up.
That's what's up.
That's what's up. What's up?
This just in. With Rich Sublang.
News.
Yes.
I have some fun news.
Do tell.
This is one that really made me laugh. People, I don't know who, but people were apparently asking what's going to why is Charlie, the character Charlie from the original Top Gun, mm-hmm. not going to be reappearing in the sequel?
Yes.
And Kelly McGillis, who played Charlie, responded saying, "I'm old and I'm fat and I look age appropriate for what my age is, and that is not what the whole scene is about." she's like, "I am totally cool not being asked to be in this movie," because she's like, "Just look at me. Like, there's no way I'm not playing that same role anymore." And it kind of got me thinking about just sort of what happens to actresses in Hollywood,
right.
like as they age. And,
yeah.
You know, she's 62 and she looks like a 62-year-old woman should look.
Right.
If she were a dude, like, she'd still be working.
Yep. It's true.
In leading roles.
Truth. There's a very
dating
few
20 years younger.
Very few
40
women that make it past 35 in Hollywood. Yeah.
And there are your Streeps and your Denches and your... Yeah. Name another one.
Robertses.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts. Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
They made
I still
the
feel like they're still like pretty young, I feel like. I mean,
they're
probably 50s.
Not,
they're
yeah,
probably
they're 50s. Not 35.
Yeah.
But they're like Tom Cruise. You know, they're like they're working at it, and I'm sure they're getting work at it.
Maybe.
But yeah, the ones who don't necessarily
who aren't
like,
movie stars.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're in like a couple things here and there.
Yeah. Like someone who's like hasn't played that game, and she doesn't work all the time, but is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah.
Like she just let like look, I'm gray now. Look,
yeah.
Look, I'm wrinkled now. This is how it is.
Yeah,
you know, and she's so cool. But it's a terrible double standard of, you know,
yeah,
that we're still way behind the game. We're still way behind the game.
Yeah. Truth
sucks. Guess what's made $1 billion globally?
Spider-Man?
Lion King.
Boof.
$1 billion. That's more than the original movie made.
That is a
Has anyone seen it?
Shame.
Here?
I have not seen it.
No. I saw, so when we left, oh, that was, I'm talking about that when we're watching, but anyway, we saw Spider-Man, finally.
Yeah.
And when we left Spider-Man to jaunt our way over to the restrooms, the theater doors were open for Lion King. And it was during...
You caught a glimpse?
Just Can't Wait to Be King. And I just can't wait to not watch
that I was
going to
say, could you wait?
I can wait.
Good
So it
Lord.
Is a musical.
Yeah.
They
it's,
ex- do, it's the same
it's
movie.
Shot for shot.
Oh, really?
The movie.
Yeah.
Except for like a couple of tweaks and like one or two added scenes so they could give Beyonce an original song.
Which I'm sure she oversings.
Boo.
Now,
boo-boo.
Beyonce.
I'm mean, against Beyonce.
Is amazing. She has the most control over voice of any singer out there right now.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Now, if you, again, like I said before, if you close your eyes and listen, you're like, good Lord, this song is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But watching a lion, like
can't
just
really move
say
its
it's a real lion, because for all intents and purposes, it looks like a real lion. When you're like hitting the top note, belting your life away, and it's a fucking lion who can't open its mouth, it looks stupid. Like it just looks dumb. It's a shame that this movie made more than the original. Like the original is a masterpiece.
It's a shame that it happened. That this movie
and
happened.
This, I'm sure it looks amazing. I'm sure it looks amazing. And I've heard the songs, and they sound great. Like I've listened to the soundtrack on Spotify. It sounds good. Like Seth Rogen can't sing.
I'm gonna hold to my promise and fall on the sword and go see it so I can have a
real
Seth Rogen's in it too.
He's Pumbaa.
He is. He's Pumbaa. Mm.
And I've heard that him and Billy Eichner are phenomenal as the
I
parts, except for he just can't sing it. But I've heard that like their quips and their everything, because they spent all the time together in the booth and everything, and like which is rare these days. But anyway, just the Can't Wait to Be King part that I saw through the doors of the open theater,
which
like,
I'm sure has exactly zero of the color and character.
Yeah, it looks real. Well. It's like, ugh. Yeah. So there's like, there goes an ostrich running by. Great. Yeah. How come you're not jumping on the giraffe's head?
Yeah.
Oh, right, because you're a fucking lion and you're
have
a giraffe.
Any fun.
Because they can't. Like, it has to look real. Anyway.
Boo.
Yeah, I won't be seeing that movie.
Have you seen the cartoon?
I did see the cartoon finally. Like, oh. It was a long time. I think we talked about that. Like, I hadn't seen it for forever.
Because that movie, the cartoon Lion King, is phenomenal.
And still I saw a production of the
stage. That's even better.
Yeah. Stage show is great.
Yeah. Anything?
I've got more.
Do tell.
Zoom-tight. Apparently, Natalie Portman is doing her homework, and she's going to read the entire arc of Mighty Thor.
Nice.
She posted on her Instagram, which, you know, could be, hey, I'm going to show you guys that I'm going to do this, and I not really do it. Or maybe she really is.
Right.
Either way.
And I'm sure she'll read all of it, and then they're going to go, we're not doing it.
We're
that.
Not doing it. <anything.
laughs> <We're laughs> the only thing that's the same is that you'll be Thor.
I'm going to learn Vasgardian tongue or something like
close enough. You're close. Remember a couple years ago when Peter Jackson thought that shooting The Hobbit in high frame rate was going to be a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Ang Lee thinks that shooting Gemini Man in an even higher frame rate is going to be an even better idea. 120 FPS.
Why? And remind me what that does. It makes it look weird.
It looks so. I can't accurately scientifically
describe
this.
It's faster than you can do it in your head.
So yeah, the human eye, the way we perceive motion, like even real life motion,
right?
There's motion blur. Like if you wave your hand in front of your
especially
face,
when there's light, like you can see.
And there's light, it'll be a little bit blurry,
right?
Between them. When you're shooting at a higher frame rate, it almost completely eliminates that blur. So everything looks stiff. So instead of me waving my hand, it looks more like me, like I'm doing the na 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 na.
It's weird. It's just weird looking. It looks unnatural because you can't.
Everything
because it's better than what your brain can do.
Slightly too sharp and slightly too.
Right.
That's what people say. It looks hyper real.
Right.
And it just, I don't know.
Maybe it'll work if it's a stylized type movie, which obviously that's probably going to be more of a stylized type movie.
That's a science fiction movie, right?
Yeah, Gemini Man. And it's supposedly, you know, there's this, I don't know if this is necessarily a movement, but there's a school of thought saying that, hey, movies are going to be like this in the future. Like, this is what we're going to do. Like,
not
everything's
going to
be hyper realistic. It's like, I don't know, man. Like, maybe, you know, maybe I'm just being an old man yelling at a cloud about it.
Right.
Because I don't like the way it
looks. Well, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't. 3D hasn't really become the thing.
It has come and gone how many times at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're just like, no, we kind of like the way movies look, like the way they look.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And the other challenge there, of course, is that when you're doing special effects, like VFX, especially really involved VFX, like creating, you know, let's say actual lions and tigers and bears or like a person, it's easier to do that in a slower frame rate because there's like forgiveness in those in-between parts where it should be kind of blurry. Mm-hmm. Like, if you ever watch, go back and look at old school cartoons. Like, look at The Simpsons. Look at, they even did this in The Mask. But you'll see parts of the animated part look really kind of funky. Like, you'll see a still frame of Homer with, like, three eyes or something like that. Because in the motion, he's like, waving his head back and forth.
Right, right, right.
But in the single frame, like, you have to add something in that looks kind of weird in order to make the motion look right.
Right.
So if you're shooting at 4 times that actual frame rate, like animating that on a computer has to be bananas to make, because they have a younger version of Will Smith in the movie.
You say he's doing 120?
120.
Good dang, God. Lee!
120.
Yeah.
It's too much. I'll give you a quote that he said from the article.
Okay.
Since I actually read the article, I'm not just reading the headlines, guys. He actually did this before. He tried it with another movie. I forget the full title of it, but he's paraphrasing here.
Life by.
With Billy, that was the first time I tried this media, and I was really overwhelmed.
Oh.
It was like all of a sudden I had to swap to a new religion. Like, what am I going to do? For this, I start to feel like I know what I'm doing now.
Okay.
He's talking about Billy, what's his name, Long, Halftime Walk, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a part of that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Struggles.
Dude. Oh man, see how I ranted about like from Disney, the people that brought you whatever, like last week.
Yeah.
From Ang Lee, it was
a trailer in Spider-Man. I forget what the movie's for. It's produced by the Russo brothers. I forget which one it was. Oh. Anyway, it said like from it literally said
by the producers.
It said produced by
the visionary,
whatever Russo, whatever their names.
Was
are.
It James Gunn for?
It said produced by, and I forget their names, but James Russo and James Russo, whatever their names are. But it said produced by Russo and Russo, and then next title screen said the visionary directors of Infinity War, Endgame,
yeah,
Winter Soldier, and I was like, they produced this movie.
Right.
Like, right. produced right. by the visionary directors of these other good movies. It's like, well, they're not directing it.
There's a 5% like, chance they saw one of the ideas before the movie was shot and said, yeah, that's good.
Right.
And that's the extent of like, their involvement.
I'll give you some money.
I hate when people put the word visionary in there.
That makes me
crazy. Well. Especially as a freaking, they're producing it. Like, you're selling, you're like throwing that out there to the people that don't really know.
Yeah.
But they're like, ooh, from the people that made Endgame, that Endgame is really good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, they produced this one.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
It's underhanded. Is
yeah.
what, that's how it
yeah.
feels to me.
Yeah.
It's not right. It ain't
but
right.
I forget what movie it was. But they produced a new movie. Stupid.
I got more news.
Yes.
News.
To bring this back from the dead, Game of Thrones.
What are you doing? That is a horrific noise.
I don't know what's happening.
There's
two Game of Thrones things.
One, even though it's nominated for 32.
It's 32.
What's up? Okay. Yeah, I heard about that too. And, even people like Lena Headey got nominated this year. And she was in like five scenes, just standing there holding a cup of wine.
Looking at wine.
She did jack all this year, and she's nominated.
Right. So because the show has been nominated for Emmys, scripts are now available to be read online. And people are perusing the scripts for the final season and are becoming even angrier at what they are finding.
Oh, really?
Because I don't know if you've heard. Some people have some qualms with the writing for season 8.
What?
Calling it lazy.
No.
Haphazard. What have you.
Throwing away years of what they've established.
Right.
In the script.
Right.
Stand there looking brooding.
And there.
Next shot.
There are two points that are kind of becoming points of contention. One of them was in the season 8 finale, you know, Drogon famously like melts the Iron Throne, which can be seen as a symbolic gesture as destroying the thing that destroys his mother and blah, blah, blah. Right. No, it turns out that was an accident. He didn't really mean to do that. He was just kind of mad and breathing fire or wherever, and the throne just happened to burn down. That is in the script.
Drogon, in a rage, blows fire everywhere, and the throne happens to get hit.
Yeah.
Instead of burning up the guy who just killed
Instead
his mother.
Instead of purposely,
yeah,
having anything. But even better than that... This is actual written dialogue. These are the scenes. It's the very end when Arya says, "I'm not going to go back north." And Jon says, "This is news to Jon and Sansa both." These are the stage directions. Sansa says, "Where are you going?" Arya says, "What's west of Westeros?" And Jon and Sansa look at each other. And then there's a stage direction that says, "They both failed geography."
Wow.
Like, you couldn't convey. There's no other intelligent literary way to convey that feeling without bringing in an actual grade school subject.
Now, is this the Damon
to your award winning show? Yeah.
I wonder if they've ever done anything else like that kind of shitty.
I don't know.
Nope, they sure haven't. Not the two of them combined.
So yeah, the internet's
on. Oh, they both weren't lost. No, just the one guy. Just Linda Hoff was lost.
Yeah. So the internet's mad. Rightfully so, because it's like, well, it's like you just farted this out, is what it looks like now.
Yep, and they did. Good. Yep. Good for them.
And finally, and I can't believe this is happening, not because it's, I guess it is, it's that it's surprising, not in a bad way, but in a great way, in a very pleasing way, the Mortal Kombat movie reboot will include game-accurate fatalities.
Nice.
Which is something
fatalizer?
That I thought.
Is the fatalizer
the
in
fatalizers.
It?
Yep.
Which I thought, there's no way.
Right.
Like, there's no, they'll, like, you know, change him up a little bit, but they're gonna stick to the game.
Ripping spines out and
I kinda
making
punching
the baby.
People's heads off. And
yes.
I kind of look forward to that.
Infantize them.
Well, see, that's... They have to just be doing it on, like, no names. Unless, like, they're like, well, I guess Katana's going to die.
Yep, you're
so.
Not in the movie anymore.
Yeah. I guess she's getting her spine ripped
Goodbye.
Out.
Goodbye.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I look forward to that. But I can't believe they're doing that. It's
yeah.
cool. That's it. That's all I got.
Nice. I dig it.
And that's the way it was.
Sweet. So we do have a phone call coming up, but first let's check out what Maddie. No, let's do the phone call first. So, like BJ mentioned, he got to see Book of Mormon here in San Diego. And my really good friend and BJ's good friend and Rich's acquaintance now that he talked to him on the phone. John Sangster, Jonathan Sangster, I think is his actual like credited stage name. But he got to be Elder Cunningham in the tour production of Book of Mormon, which is making the rounds.
So cool.
Right now. And so we got to chat with him for a little bit. So let's check that out right now. Where's the phone army? That one.
Life's a binge. Phone army.
Hello, hello.
Hey, John, can you hear us okay? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Cool.
Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
So that's
hello.
Jared and Rich. I don't know if you know Rich or not. But...
He doesn't.
Nope, I don't.
That's okay. That's okay. So where are you at?
I am in Vegas.
Vegas.
Yes.
How long are you there for?
So we're here until Monday.
So is it like pretty much 5 days a city right now, or is that what it's like? Or?
It's like a week. Yeah, we do 8 shows a week usually, Tuesday through Sunday, and Mondays are usually travel days unless we're in a city for longer, then we just have Mondays off. So we got here. We left San Diego this past Monday, and then got here on Monday, and then we head to next Monday.
Right on. For those of you who do not know, John is talking about the touring production of Book of Mormon, which John is a star in.
I
went and saw it on Friday. Oh, my God. John, oh, my God.
Get it.
Now, it's a blast.
Golly. That was so special, I can't even stand it. So
I've had a few days to like process that performance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life, because it was like, there were so many groups of support system that were there. Mm-hmm. I had some of my best friends, in my life that were there. My parents drove in from Vegas to be there. My high school theater teachers drove from Vegas to San Diego. And then, you know, I had all these other support systems that I had met in San Diego, my best friends in San Diego, friends from SeaWorld, friends from the theater world in San Diego. So there were just so many people there that night. It was such an overwhelming feeling. And I like, you know, as a standby, I'm not on every night. And so that was my 7th time doing the show. And like the first time I did the show, I got emotional because, you know, it was such a memorable, great experience. But Friday night just like brought me to tears, because like, it was this energy that during the curtain call that literally I had never felt. And it felt like being like just slammed, body slammed with this impalpable, incredible energy.
John,
yeah, it was amazing.
Like I said, I was second from the back row, like in the very back row. And during
Civic is huge.
It's huge. It's great. But it all read so well. I mean, everything, it was so great. At first I was trying to get some binoculars, cause I wanted to see your face, you know, wanted to see your face. And, but it all read. It just was so great. It read so well. And during curtain calls, for sure. I mean, like I know you. You know, we're kind of friends. But like,
yes,
it meant so much for me. And I was just trying to think of like all your other friends and your family, like just how great that was. And strangers were eating you up. You fucking owned it. Like, it was so great. So had you played that part before?
I mean, it was just
was that the first time going on? No,
that was my 7th time doing. So I'm as a standby. I'm just a standby for Elder Cunningham.
Oh, okay, that was gonna be a question.
So that's another like the hardest part about being one of the hardest parts about being a standby is explaining to people what a standby is.
Exactly.
Because if you're outside of that world, you don't, it's hard to wrap your mind around. Like, I've had so many people be like, oh, I can't wait to see you tonight, and I'm like, oh, hi, you know, like, I'm you know, I'm not on tonight, but enjoy the show. And they're like, oh, well, that's okay. You know, I don't need to see you in the role. I'm happy to see you in any role. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I'm sitting backstage reading a book. Or like, I'm sitting backstage with the other offstage cast and we're all playing Code Names or some other game or watching a movie, or you know what I mean?
You're like, I'm not an understudy or a swing, guys. I'm a standby. It's different.
Yeah. So that's I tell everybody, I'm like, okay, so that the order of events essentially are principal roles will usually have standbys. So like popular principal roles, like for our show, it's like Elder Price and Elder Cunningham. Mm-hmm. The two of them both have standbys. And those are us that if they call out, we're the first ones to go in. So if the person in the role calls out, if they get sick, if they get injured, if they have a family emergency or take vacation, we're the ones that go in. Then from there, if we can't go in, then in the ensemble is an understudy.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's also within the ensemble Mormon Boys, there's an understudy for Elder Price and then also an understudy for Elder Cunningham. And then there's the Swings, which are the other offstage cast, and they know all of the ensemble tracks.
Right on.
So, like, we have two Mormon Boy Swings who know all the understudy Mormon Boy tracks, and then we have two Ugandan female swings and two Ugandan male swings, and they know all of the female and male Ugandan tracks. So that's one of the hardest parts about being a standby is explaining to everybody that I'm not on most of the time. I'm not on, and I'm only on for this one role. It's just this principal role. Yeah. So like other notable roles would be like, you know, Elphaba in Wicked. Mm-hmm. She always has a standby. Let's see. I'm trying to think of like other, most of the popular shows that have really big female leads or male leads will have a standby or two. Like, so for us, there's two standbys each for Elder Price and Elder Cunningham.
Nice.
Now, so even if the guy were to call out, like even if my friend Jordan were to call out, it wouldn't even be guaranteed that I would be the one to go on because there's another Elder Cunningham standby and they try to switch it off.
Now, is there any, say, or is it just kind of coincidence that you're like, look, I have a big group of friends in San Diego, any chance that I could go on? Or is it just kind of like you just sit back and wait? And
yeah, it's more of a sit back and wait kind of thing. You know, I that's another question is, you know, I get a lot of people being like, well, can you request to go on? Can you please go on while you're here in Vegas? Or are you going on in San Diego before I was there and everything? And what I've also had to explain to people is as standbys, every time we go on, we get a pay bump. So we get what's called a principal pay bump. Mm-hmm. And so essentially us asking to go on is saying, hi, can the company fork over more money?
Right.
You know, and although Book of Mormon is a multimillion-dollar corporation, thank you, South Park, it's still, I don't want to be that one to be like, hey, South Park, can you fork over some more money?
I didn't get to go see it, unfortunately, because BJ's lazy. But so knowing the show, at least the recording very well, there's Josh Gad, who is Josh Gad. And then there's Ben Platt, who's very opposite of Josh Gad and Ben Platt. And knowing you personally, I would imagine that you're doing your own thing, but I'd imagine you're like more down the middle between the two of them, leaning towards like the Ben Platt kind of reserved Cunningham. How would you describe how you play him?
You know, the best part about Cunningham is, like, for the three of us that are all Cunninghams on this tour. So there's Jordan, who is in the role full time. He was a standby for 2 years before he assumed the role on tour. Then there's my friend Jacob, who is also a standby. And then there's me. And all three of us are completely different.
Right.
And that's the great part about Elder Cunningham, is that you can be completely different and the story, the comedy and all of that will still land. For example, I would correlate this very similar to Biff at Sea Lion, you know, all of us were so completely different and yet it still worked.
Right.
And so I really took like the direction that I worked with the associate directors, and I really just took their direction in, you know, he's kind of a puppy dog. He is just so thrilled to finally have this best friend and will do anything for him and hang on to every word he says, like it's the most important thing coming out of anyone's mouth. And so my approach to the character is very just being that puppy dog. I will do anything for you. Let me follow you around. And then when there's a sudden shift and Cunningham is the one taking the reins. Ooh, dogs.
Yes.
They're a little excited.
When it kind of takes that shift, then it's the first time in his life where he's kind of gained control of something and he has to like navigate it to be like, okay, how am I going to do this? Well, let's see. I've watched MTV and I've seen all these rock stars and I've seen all these smooth R&B singers. So I'm just going to gravitate from everything that I've watched and other famous people and just kind of hone all of that and become this person that I've never been able to be before.
You manned so up.
Exactly.
So
taking the reins.
Now, I've seen this show. This was the third time that I've seen this show.
Okay, yeah.
And do they change it? I swear, I'm like, I don't remember this in other ones. Is there a lot of liberties that are given to each production?
No, I mean, that was, you know, also the one thing, a lot of the direction I got in rehearsals and even in my final callbacks, the direction I would get, because, you know, as former Biffs, we're always thinking of bits.
Always.
always thinking of good bits. And I would get told all the time, trust the text. Trust the text.
Right.
And as soon as I did that, it was like, right, of course, trust the text. I don't need to add this bit. This line, if delivered, you know, authentically, lands itself. I don't need to do much more. Now, as I've gotten into rehearsals and found my flow of the show, bits have been added that work and that they're like, yes, keep it.
So I'm going to imagine some of your dancing is it's got to be you, right? Like,
Some of it, like one of the best parts of the show is one of my favorite parts of the show is Baptize Me.
Right.
Because there's moments.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. There's moments in that song where I have freedom to kind of do what I want. And Nabalungi has to match what I'm doing.
Oh, that was that's cute. That's cool. Now that you say that.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, I was like,
so
that's funny.
Yeah, that's one that I have a little freedom to do. And it keeps the Nabalungi on their toes. And it's just fun because we'll have a different connection than, you know, when she's doing it with one of the other Cunninghams.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so that one is a little bit of freedom. But like Man Up is mostly all set. You know, this show's been running for so long. They know what they're doing. And so
you got to get those pelvic thrusts in, man.
Yeah.
He gets them in.
You got it.
He gets them in. I'm telling you.
That's
people
iconic.
Were responding all the way up to the top to your dancing and everything. I was like, it was great.
Yeah.
Now, I probably couldn't, we can't use it, But oops, if I didn't leave my voice recorder on and record some of the songs.
Jesus Christ.
Whoops. But the laughter. What's so great is like it's clear who's like hearing the show or seeing it and hearing the bits for the very first time.
Oh yeah.
And
right.
Just they're so funny. They're so funny.
I remember, I mean, obviously like I've had my radar on this show since it came out. And I had listened to the soundtrack and all of that and obviously loved the music. And then I remember the first time I saw it, which was at the Civic in San Diego, it was even funnier than because as much as you listen to it and as much as you hear the album and all of that, there are so many things that aren't on the album that are visual gags. And I just remember that night being like, gosh, I've loved this soundtrack for so long and had no idea that the show was even funnier than the soundtrack.
And more moving. It's like, I remember for the first time seeing it, and it's happened every single time. But just by the end, you're crying, and it's not like you're sad. It's just uplifting. Right. It's overwhelming. It's so well done.
Yes, it is. There's such a beautiful message to the show that kind of comes out of nowhere, you know, because you are watching the show, and you see the beginning, and you're like, oh, this is really cute. This is fun. This is funny. This is great. And then they end up in Uganda, and you're like, okay, here's the South Park, more of the South Park integrated into it. Okay, this is the ride we're on. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you're having these moments of, oh my gosh, I am so invested in these characters and into their lives and into their story. And I have a hard time when I'm on stage. I have a hard time not tearing up.
I could imagine.
Near the end of the show, because it's such a moving story. And if you don't, if you only listen to the soundtrack, or if you only hear bits and pieces of what, you know, some of the songs in the show, you wouldn't know that.
No.
And that's why I always tell everybody, I'm like, you have to get through the first 20 minutes of the show and you're sold.
Yeah, because once it takes that hard left turn at Hasadiga Ibuwa, hard left turn, then it's like, whoa.
You have to get through that, and you have to also like get that mindset of, you know, they're not just singing Hasadiga Ibuwa just to sing Hasadiga Ibuwa. Yeah. Put yourselves in their situation.
It's dark.
If you were living their lives, you would probably be saying the same thing.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, it's so dark.
Yeah, it's the story is so. Yeah, it's so it ends up with like this nice little heartwarming package.
So not just Book of Mormon experience being what it is, but dude, you're on tour, man.
Yeah,
like what's that all about?
It is such a blast.
like that
it
is
such. I had done another short tour before this. It was a non-union tour. And when I got off that tour, I kind of had this moment of, I don't know if I ever want to tour again.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed visiting cities and exploring other cities, but that tour was specifically hard. You know, we had a lot of one-dayers where literally we were in a city for one day, and then we would be bused to the next city the second day, and then be bused to another. Yeah, so it was just physically draining. So I kind of was like, oh gosh, I don't know if touring's for me. Obviously this is a very different situation. You know, it's a union tour, and we're never in a city less than a week. And it is a blast. I mean, I've only been with the tour since May, and I've visited some places that have, like, I went to Philadelphia for the first time. I went to Philly for the first time, which was incredible because I got to, like, explore Independence Hall and explore all Philly and just kind of walk around apologizing to the founding fathers.
That's funny. Yes. Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know?
Philly, what other towns have you been in?
Philly and Toronto.
Toronto. Which, I want to go
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Toronto is actually where I made my debut. My debut was international, which that was great. You know, we were in Philly and Toronto for 2 weeks, so we got to do a lot of exploring on those two cities, which was great. And then after Toronto, then we ended up out west. So then we were in Thousand Oaks, and then San Jose, then down to San Diego, and now here we are in Vegas. So it's been nice because it's been like, after being on the East Coast, I was on the East Coast for about 2-ish months, a month and a half. Then I got to come over and kind of come home to the West Coast, especially with like, you know, Thousand Oaks close to LA, but especially like San Diego and now in Vegas, which is where I grew up and staying at home with my parents. And
so do you think you're going to get on in Vegas?
I don't know, because I went on in San Diego, and I actually did a whole weekend in San Jose. I don't know if I'll be going on in Vegas. I mean, I'll never say never, because you never know what's going to happen. But San Diego worked out perfectly because the associate director was visiting in San Diego. And none of the creatives had seen me do a show.
Nice.
Since I had joined, they'd been in rehearsals with me, and they had seen me do like an understudy run, but they had never seen me actually do a show. So the reason I was going on that Friday was because they needed to see me do an actual show and to see how, you know, everything that they saw in the understudy run, to see how it would land with an audience.
So you were auditioning essentially.
basically just doing the show, trying to integrate all the notes she had given me 2 days before.
Right. And so right now you're being kind enough to take time out of your day or the, you know, show, so to speak, to talk to us. But if you weren't, and you know, you say you're backstage reading a book, but having to be show ready all the time, like you gotta be, are you like dancing around backstage? Are you singing along and stuff? Like,
yeah, that's the second hardest part about being a standby, is that this show requires so much stamina. I mean, BJ, you saw, you know,
yes, I was thinking that
it requires so much stamina. And as a standby, we're not really, given the opportunity to build that stamina.
That's right. You're just sitting backstage. You know, like,
we're sitting backstage, not doing the show. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now you're on, you know, and it's a Broadway tour. We're expected to know our stuff and to do it to the best of the best. And so I usually, what I'll do is every week in our new place, I'll usually trail backstage for one show, just to kind of get a sense of
feel for that space.
That theater, because every theater is a little different, and sometimes our quick changes are in a slightly different location, or our chair to get water is in a slightly different location. So I usually trail one show, and then usually another show that week, I'll find a rehearsal space or another dressing room that has the show feed playing through it. And I'll usually go through the show with the show feed, so I can sing full out, so that I, you know, keep that stamina up. And I'll, you know, do the choreography as full out as I can, depending on how large the room is. And the nice thing is, one of the other Elder Price standbys is also sort of from San Diego. He's originally from Utah, but had moved to San Diego kind of around the same time I did. And we had done a show together in San Diego. So that was really nice to come into. He started like a month and a half, 2 months before I did.
Nice.
And so usually him and I will find a location together and run through stuff together. Since most of our stuff is together.
Nice. I have a real quick question about the behind the scenes stuff. Yeah. How is the turn it off quick change done?
The one thing we're not allowed to give away.
I know.
That's funny. I was thinking the same thing.
Magic.
Of course it is.
It's theater.
It's live theater,
it's called
baby.
Mormon magic.
It's so fantastic. And I forgot about it because I was giggling at like clap, clap, and the lights go off. I'm like, ah, that's cute. Clap, and the lights go off. Uh-huh. And then clap, clap, and they're back on. And then I was like, wait a minute. They get into a full-on thing.
Yeah.
And then I was like, when does that clap, clap, and then bam, you're like, there it is. It's like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That's yeah, cool. it's a great moment. But yeah, that's like one of the few things we are not allowed to.
Which is
give
funny.
Away. I love it. Which I love that there are like trade secrets you can't tell.
You know what's really funny is I had no idea how it happened until maybe my second month into the tour, because even I can't even see what's going on stage when I'm like trailing backstage at that moment. I can't see what's happening because it is so dark.
Right.
So I had no idea how they were doing it.
And they won't tell me. Sure, I'm going to have to do this one day. Like, nope, yeah. you'll find out when you need to find out. So
finally, I broke down one of those Mormon boys, and I was like, you have to show me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, man, I'm going to tell you, that was such a special night. And
I am so happy that you got to be there. And,
me too. And I'm going to make Jared feel bad again. But I was going to go down and get – so I bought tickets. When after you said, I'm going on, I'm like, all right, well, I got to get a ticket. So I'm like, I bought a ticket. And then I was like, oh, I should go down and get in the lottery and then try to get up close so I could see you close up.
Right.
Well, I didn't do that. But Todd Glazebrook did do that and did win the lottery and sat up close for it. And I felt a little bad for Jared. But
yeah, only
yeah. I that's what Todd and Christine.
That is so
in.
Cool.
And you know Jesse Perry was there, and her boyfriend Eric and her mom wanted to see the show, and so they came down and put their names in the lottery, and because Todd and Christine won, they were able to give the seats that they already had to Jesse's mom and boyfriend, so they were able to see the show.
Oh, so they didn't have tickets.
They didn't. The only reason they had tickets is because someone won the lottery.
Because Todd won. Oh, my God.
Todd and Christine won. So, and that was really fun to have Todd and Christine so close because, I mean.
That's so cool.
Not that we can really see much up there. I mean,
right.
The lights are pretty bright.
But you can see them?
I did clock when I came out at one, like, near the top of the show. I clocked Todd's tie.
Uh-huh.
It was a pretty loud tie he had going on. Uh-huh. And so I immediately went, oh, okay, Todd and Christine are sitting right there. And I avoided that the entire show.
I would imagine that would be very difficult. Like, just don't look over there. Don't look over there. So
yeah,
that is so cool.
And I knew where like my parents were sitting and stuff. So it was pretty magical.
Yeah. And I didn't. It's so funny. Cause I was like, "Who's this girl you're hugging in this video?" Like, I've seen two different angles from it. And you're like, "That's my mom." And I'm like,
"That's my mom."
I start bawling. I'm like, That's so great.
Yeah.
Like, that's just because I just thought it. For some reason, I thought it was Cassie Bowerman. For some reason, that's what like the hair.
Because
your mom looks young. Like, she looks youthful. Like, at least her hair does, like, because I don't really see her face. And but I was like, I thought it was someone much younger than someone who could be your mother. So,
yeah, that's my mom.
That is so great.
She has just, that night was super, super special. And she has repeatedly told me that was the greatest night and of her life and the proudest moment of her entire life, which, like, got me so emotional.
I'm sure.
So it was a very, very, very special night, and I was so thankful for everyone who was there or who was there in spirit.
Yay, that's me.
We got spirit. Yes, we do.
Yes.
We got spirit. Give me a ticket.
So, cool. Yeah.
Well, John, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much, man. And
absolutely.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of the rest of your life.
Yeah. I know. I keep telling it. Everyone's like, how long are you on the tour? And I'm like, as long as they'll keep me.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Until they ship me to Broadway.
Yeah. How do you stop doing a great job? You know.
Right. So, I mean, it's I will stay here as long as they will have me, because I love this show. This is like a dream job, and I just like couldn't be happier.
Right on. Good for you, man.
That's awesome.
Good for you.
So. Thanks, take care, John. Of San Diego for me.
Thanks, John. John Sangster.
Thank you for having me.
Star of Book of Mormon, touring right now all across the United States. So,
thanks, guys.
Right, bye, buddy.
We'll see ya
later, dude.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Woo, woo. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan Sangster.
Dope. I hope he gets to go on again in Vegas.
I'm sure he will. Yeah. But, he brought it up before I could bring it up. Like, he went from San Diego to Vegas, and, like, I know that he's from Vegas, and right, so yeah. I was like, "Ooh, I'm gonna ask him about that." And then he told us anyway. So yeah. I was like, "Oh, yeah. you're smarter
maybe
than
not.
Me. he's smarter than I am.
You know more about that.
Well,
than I
it's
do.
Cool too that his folks came from Vegas
right.
to San Diego, because you yeah. know they may have been thinking like, "Well, I know it's coming to Vegas. You know, maybe
we'll see him.
Maybe we'll see him." But like he had even said, like it worked out perfectly because this is one of those probably the only time that he sort of knew in advance that he's going on,
yeah,
because they needed to see him do the show and they just happened to be in San Diego. And like, what a freaking perfect coincidence of like, dude,
of
everyone Ta-da. Everyone is here, and his parents and family were close enough to come here,
yeah,
and he spent so much time here, like, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna come watch you in San Diego, and he's like, that's perfect, like, it's
yeah.
perfect.
Yeah.
So
it's gonna be very validating. It's like,
it's
I'm in the right place doing the right things.
Yeah.
If things just like work out like that, you know?
And like, I remember him telling me like, he's like, well, I may be getting cast in Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
And I was like, squee!
Yeah.
How cool is that? Like, that's so awesome. Good for you, man.
Yeah.
You know, and then find out, I got it. Dude, that's so great.
I'm going on tour.
Great. Yeah. That's so cool. I'm yeah. going on Friday in town.
Me.
I'm buying a ticket.
Me, him, Tim Roberts, Dallas McLaughlin, and Zach Wolf still have our group chat for when all of us were biff at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like we are just constantly sending each other like BS texts, like back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then when he went on, Tim was there and got to see it, and so like he took a picture of the curtain call and like put that to the group chat, and like we're all like crying like, yeah,
oh,
little Johnny made it. Like,
I have the
nice.
Curtain call. I have yeah. got a good hour, 2 hours. I was listening to it this morning. It's not the quality
of course,
not
yeah.
that great, but it was just fun to like listen to. Like yeah. I was like doing stuff this morning.
That's
like,
awesome.
That's cool.
I was almost late for work because I was like,
no,
so
couldn't
much.
Happen to a more deserving
for sure.
cool dude. And like, it, you know, I wanted to say it while he's on the phone. I've told him, you know, I texted him and whatever. But he's amazing. He is like legitimately amazing. Like he is a really, really good performer. Has the pipes of a freaking god. Like can sing anything. And he's hilarious. And he's amazing. So,
well, I realize other than like doing our last pet show that we did with all the hosts.
Right.
Which we only did one with him. And it was funny because he only did the show once,
right.
Or maybe yeah. maybe twice. Maybe.
Yeah, as an emergency, like, we need somebody.
Right.
I can do it.
Right. Yep. Yeah, he's learned it and
yeah.
did it in one day. But anyway, I've never seen him do anything. Like, literally, I've never seen him be a biff.
Right.
Maybe he was a Christmas elf, maybe, or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know? So
he was an elf all the time. Yeah.
I didn't get to really see him doing that either. I talked to him between, you know, backstage, but, like, it was so cool to see him do stuff and just kill it. He did some like butt shaking things that people were just like punching each other.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Well, and like he even said, you can listen to the cast recording all you want, and when you hear Josh Gad sing Man Up, you're like, this is a funny song. Christy, man up. Like, it's funny words and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I said, do you do those pelvic thrusts? Because, like, when the music starts, man up, he's just standing there literally, like, humping the air. And, like, you don't know that unless you see it.
Right.
It's one of the funniest things in the world. Mm-hmm. And so, like,
now, where have you seen that?
I've seen clips and like okay. on Tony performances and okay. stuff. And like when you see that stuff, you're like, that just makes it even funnier than just listening to the cast recording. And then there's all the lines and scenes that aren't on the recording at all. And so you're like, man, like, that's why it's just, duh, it's funnier.
Yeah,
like,
and that's why I was asking, like, do they ever take liberties? Because I swear yeah. that there were, like, scenes that maybe, you know, and it's very likely and possible that I just didn't remember them.
I believe that's the case.
but I'm like, that's so funny. I don't remember that before.
Well, you were probably laughing so hard. Like, that's also possible. Like,
probably.
You just missed it because you're laughing. And like,
especially the very first time seeing it. Right. You're just so giddy. Yeah. You know, I'm just like, I can't believe I'm watching the show.
I'm in the theater.
Yep. And the show watching that you're crazy show. About. Yeah. That yeah. you're just like, it's like the thing. This was Hamilton before it was Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then. And it's still great. So, how cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
We're proud.
So, really cool. Really, really cool. And thanks for, we said it before, but we'll say it again. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us. It was really cool, John.
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you. But let's find out what Maddie has to say. He reviewed Tarantino's latest flick for us, so let's check it out. I'm not going to listen because I don't want it to be spoiled. He's usually pretty good about not spoiling. Yeah, I'll listen. Why not? Anyway, let's check it out.
And now, another installment of What Do I Know with Matt Warburton.
Hi everyone, I'm Matt, and this is What Do I Know? Well, this week I went to see the 9th movie that Quentin Tarantino made. I know it's the 9th, because they were flashing it in all of the ads. I don't know why they felt the need to promote that fact. 9 is an odd number. It's not like a nice round 10. And I don't know if it was supposed to make us impressed that Tarantino did 9 movies. But all I could think of was, Tarantino only did 9 movies? I totally thought he did way more than that. I had to do a little research just to be sure. So, yeah, I guess if you disregard his first short, which most directors would, and cancel out My Best Friend's Birthday, which is noted as Tarantino's first, but may just not have made it through the festivals, so he doesn't count it, then you start at Reservoir Dogs to Pulp Fiction, skip 4 rooms because each director has their own segment, so it wasn't really his own movie, but it's still kind of a cool idea. Pick back up with Jackie Brown, then take a break for 5 years and pick up again with Kill Bill 1 and then Kill Bill 2. Grindhouse, which he wrote and directed Death Proof, but since Grindhouse is a collaboration of 2 separate works by 2 separate directors, we may not be counting that one as well. Then we'll continue back with Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, and finally, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But starting off at Reservoir Dogs, counting those movies gets you a nice round 10. So either they are collapsing Kill Bill 1 and 2 into one movie, or they're just not counting Death Proof because that was part of Grindhouse, which, like 4 Rooms, was a feature that had featured works from 2 different directors, so it wasn't 100% Tarantino, even though his contribution was 2 freaking hours. All this to say, if they wanted to make this movie an even 10, they could very well have. But no. That honor will be going to Tarantino's next movie, Star Trek, which he is slated to write and direct himself. Anyway, let's talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Should have hit the tangent train
button. So we're all familiar with the murder of Sharon Tate, right? Sharon Tate, the actress in the 60s who was married to Roman Polanski. She got murdered while about 9 months pregnant by some hippies from Charles Manson's cult in her home in L.A., in 1969. Well, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is sort of based around that story. They take Sharon Tate's story and say, what if we tell that story but pan next door and tell the story of her fictional neighbor? The film follows the end of the career of a washed-up cowboy star, Rick Dalton, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, and his friend and stuntman, Cliff Booth, played by Brad Pitt. Their stories are pretty separated, and then everything kind of conjoins back up on the day that the Manson cult members drive up to kill Sharon Tate. I have to say, while I was watching this, I was a bit underwhelmed with this movie. I mean, It was good and everything, but I was just kind of expecting a certain pace or beats that just weren't there. Now, don't get me wrong, the last 5 to 20 minutes of the movie are great and just smack you across the face. But everything leading up to that is a bit slow and kind of actually dull. The characters were good enough to keep me engaged. Brad Pitt again steals the show. DiCaprio made me laugh a lot and is pretty freaking delightful. But most of the bigger jokes revolved around what we've already seen in the trailers. Margot Robbie was good as Sharon Tate, but all in all, she wasn't a huge part of the movie, and was probably the least memorable part about it. I really didn't think she needed to be there as much as she was, and yes, the ending was awesome, but Tarantino has had better climaxes, and yes, I know how that sounds. When the movie is clocking in at 2 hours and 45 minutes, and all your action happens at the climax, you better have a good one. Unfortunately, most of the film feels a bit meandery for the most part. It's complicated because the actors do a really great job with what they have. It just feels like maybe Tarantino could have pulled out his snippers and snipped an hour 15 off this one. But on the good side, and BJ, you'll appreciate this, you can go to the bathroom multiple times through this movie, come back and still understand everything that's going on, because things either take a really long time to happen or there's a lot of dialogue and sequences that really doesn't lead up to anything. Now, the other side to all of this is that even though I wasn't enjoying watching this as much in the moment, since there are so many things that don't come to fruition in the movie, it's still really fun to think about afterward. I've found that since I've seen this movie, I've had more fun thinking about and discussing it more than I had watching it. It really sticks with you, and now I want to watch it again now that my expectations are different. But now I won't be expecting that typical Tarantino pacing that I had coming into it the first time. If anything, I would recommend going and seeing this movie with a very thoughtful and low-key mindset. This is basically season 1 of Game of Thrones and ends with Battle of the Bastards. It probably won't be your favorite Tarantino film, but it definitely ends strong and stays with you. But that's just my opinion. I say, put on your best jacket and tie, hop in a classic car, and head down to the Cinerama and check this one out for yourself, because hey, what do I know? Until next time, I've been Matt, and this has been What Do I Know?
Thank you, Matt, for another great installment of What Do I Know?
Tarantino is only giving us 10 movies.
Yes.
That's why.
Yeah. I heard that, but I was like late on that too.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that's going to be.
Well, that's the thing, because like people are now saying like, well, Star Trek, like, but he's not really writing it from what I've understood. Mm-hmm. It's like, I understand it to be, he's only going to write and direct 10 movies. Right. And like Matt said, sometimes people combine Kill Bill 1 and 2 into one story.
He said that recently.
Yeah. And then some people say, well, Death Proof doesn't really count, but he hasn't said anything on that yet because I have a feeling he's probably wanting to do more.
Yeah.
And so if he does, he's like, well, Death Proof doesn't count because it's a collab. And
even if he gets to like an official 10,
right?
I don't think that something isn't going to come to him and he's like, oh, I got to make this movie. You know, and just be like, well, I can't now because I've already made 10.
I already made 10. Which would be baller as hell if he's like, sorry, I'm out.
Great idea, but nope, I'm done.
I'm out.
Even if it's just PR, it's a good idea.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's
like, oh, totally.
I'm out. I'll produce anything and make tons of money sitting on my ass, but I am not directing anything else.
Wonder how many movies Kubrick made. Not a lot.
Not a lot, yeah. Because you can buy the box set. I think there's like 7 in there.
I can only name a few off the top of my head.
Yeah, there's Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket.
Shining. Eyes Wide Shut.
Boo.
What else is in there?
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. You said Barry 2001. Barry Lyndon.
2001.
It's got to be like set.
Spartacus.
I love you, Spartacus.
He's
part of Spartacus?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Not a lot.
I've heard mixed reviews on this movie. And so most,
I hadn't heard anything.
Most of the time I've heard what Matt said in the fact that it's like slow and everything. Mm-hmm. But my understanding of the film was like it's it takes place over the very short amount of time, or maybe not even like amount of time, but it's basically takes place over like 4 days. Mm. Whether those are four consecutive days or not, I am unsure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's basically like a day in the life of, right, instead of like fast paced, typical Tarantino stuff. Like picture Reservoir Dogs. That's not really a fast paced movie.
Mm-mm.
You think it is because there's a lot of like big things that happen throughout.
Yeah.
So it's more like this, where it all takes place in a very similar fashion, but nothing really happens.
Did you like Jackie Brown?
Yes.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a slower paced movie. And it's just like a lot of it's just like, I could see people hating that movie.
Right.
I think people probably do.
I'm sure some do.
But if it's like that, you know, if it's slow paced, but like that, I'm down.
When you look at the last few, going from like Inglourious Basterds into Django into Hateful Eight, like
very,
they're like up in energy, like in your face with
face.
Yeah,
like big shootouts and things like that. So it's like, if that's what you're expecting, that's not it. It's more back to like the beginning stages of like, I'm just gonna write a long play.
Yeah.
And we're going to film it. Like, that's my understanding of it. So,
just talking about Tarantino makes me want to watch Kill Bill.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
I haven't seen that either.
Long time.
I have seen it. Yeah. It's not in a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll chat about what we've been doing with our televisions. So let's take a quick commercial break.
After these messages, we'll be right back. What did Jesus do when they sentenced him to die? Did he try to run away? Or did he just break down and cry? No, Jesus dug down deep, knowing what he had to do. When faced with
What you watching? Everybody.
Yeah.
What'd you watch, BJ?
You know, Epix had a free movie preview. I don't know if you guys knew that or not.
I did not.
Nope. Those of us without cable don't know when things have free previews because we don't check them.
True. Yeah. So even with my basic like AT&T super simple cable,
right,
when they have those free things, they apply.
Right.
And so it's
that's because you can just click on it. Like I'd have to download Epix and then turn it on every day to see if it was free.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like,
so I tried to like, because there's an Epix app on PlayStation 4, and that didn't work.
Right.
But on the channel, it flipped through it. And so it's great. So like whenever these things happen, I immediately like
DVR everything.
Yes, DVR. So I DVR'd a gang of movies.
Nice.
And so I watched a lot of movies in this last week.
Nice.
One of my favorites was on, and I loved it as much as I remember loving it before.
I concur.
Which was Is Peggy Sue Got Married?
Oh, nice.
I love
this
movie.
That's freaking classic.
I love
Cage,
this movie,
man.
Like Nicolas Cage is great in this movie.
That's classic Nick Cage.
He is great in this movie. And there I was like watching it, and Andrea's kind of bouncing around in the other room. I'm like, baby, this movie's fucking great. Like, this movie's great.
Yeah.
Like, just this, like, scenes in it and just the story. And Kathleen Turner is lovely and I adore her.
Nice.
She's great. Right on. So, also, the Rocky movies, the first four Rocky movies.
Okay.
So,
those are also on Netflix now, too.
You didn't watch five?
They didn't
Rocky
have
V, the fifth
they
one.
They didn't have the fifth one on this one. At least not in this episode. But God damn, those are all good.
Yeah.
They're all well, Rocky IV is not as good.
That's the best one.
It's terrible. Okay, it's not terrible.
I must
first
thank
of all
you.
Stallone,
it's fantastic.
Is so good.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Thanks, BJ.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's
real
funny.
Nice of you to say that.
Damn, there's a You're scene. A good guy, I want to do a scene. Yeah, where Stallone and with Mickey, because he's got a real stylized voice too.
Yeah.
He's a bum. You gotta rip his head off, Rock.
Quack, quack, quack. Sorry, that's when he was the penguin.
Yeah,
because penguins quack.
Right.
Burgess Meredith, everyone.
But Rocky III.
Mr. T.
And Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan before he was like a big wrestling star.
Oh, wow.
They make him look massive.
Yeah.
In
well,
that.
Sylvester Stallone isn't really tall.
I know. But they make him look massive.
They say 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
And they say like 400 and some pounds. Yeah. Like.
Not so much.
Yeah, but
there's
still.
That camera angle like above Hulk Hogan and it's, like, down on Stallone. Right?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. But Stallone is the master of playing extreme emotions.
Oh yeah.
They overdo it a little bit in Rocky III when Mickey dies. He just these like bestial guttural cries. Mm-hmm. You know that. That I could see his acting coach like.
Is Rocky III where the robot shows up?
Yes.
God.
Yeah.
The
which
stupid
is
80s, man.
Yeah. There's a lot of things in there.
You know what this movie needs?
Yeah.
A robot.
Robot.
Because that movie, when Mick dies, it's freaking rough.
It is rough.
Especially because he's like.
But they should have cut, if you ask me, they should have cut away instead of like having that. It's like his face and he dies and it's super sad and he's. And he does, but then they like leave the camera on him for
a little too long.
Too long, and let him like he just kind of goes. It goes too far.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It goes too far.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Stallone. You know.
It's because he can't. He's like, I think that's one of the better ones, and people don't give it enough credit because of the Mr. T and Hulk Hogan stuff, but.
It's still good.
It's still good.
And the relationship between Apollo Creed and him is so good. And these movies are great in that they literally Rocky happens. Boom. Mm-hmm. Rocky II happens and the first 5 minutes is the last 5 minutes
right.
of the movie.
Exactly. The
and
same.
The same thing happens in three and pretty much in four too.
Right.
And so it's a crack up.
I think I'll show you what happened.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Those
so that takes
good.
You right into the, yeah. the story. Like, all right, remember this? Well, now we're going to continue on. And so, good stuff. I think that might have been another.
Hey, what's Rocky 2 like? Have you seen Rocky? Yes, it's exactly the same except Rocky wins.
Yeah, and it's, but it's perfect. It's
yep.
so perfect. It's exactly the same. Done. So
Apollo's so cocky, he's like, I can't believe I went that long. There's no way. There's no way. I'm doing it again. Let's do it again. Okay, you shouldn't do that, Apollo.
Yeah, yo. Yeah. And by Rocky and 4, he's so when he's cocky. Like, yeah. I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And Talia Shire's. Now her character is like so like well spoken right. and so confident now. It's mm-hmm. it's like it's good
it's
stuff.
Growth, man. Yeah,
yeah it's good stuff.
I said I concur because we watched Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yes. And Samantha has never seen that movie.
I should have concurred.
I found out that Samantha had never seen it, and I was like. We are watching it right.
Swimming in a bucket of cream.
The first one drowns.
First one drowns. The other one churns the milk.
Until it turns to butter and climbs
turns
out.
Turns to butter and it climbs out.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and like.
I love
dude
that movie.
16. 16. Frank Abagnale was 16, yeah. and then he turned 17, and he ran away when he was like turning 17.
Yeah.
So basically from 17, 18, 19. Mm-hmm. He was doing like pretending to be a pilot and a yeah. doctor and a lawyer and like getting away with it and cashing in like $2+ million.
Gnarly.
And that's insanity. And it's real stuff that yeah. happened. Oh, it's so good.
And playing him against like Tom Hanks.
Of course.
Is, like the quote unquote bad guy because he's trying to catch him. It's
Well, it's so great because you feel good. For Tom Hanks, but he's like bumbling. But not because yeah, like everyone in the FBI treats him like he's like this outcast because who cares about bank fraud and looking at fake documents and stuff when like right. we go out and bust the gangsters or whatever. Yeah. And he's like dealing
some
with
real
bank
crime
fraud
is happening here.
Right. And so like he's trying to like get everyone to like this is real stuff. Like just give me the case and I can handle it. And like
yeah.
people are laughing at him behind his back. And you're like, man, you feel for both these guys, which is why it makes so much sense that. They eventually,
they
like when they catch
friends.
Him or whatever, they become good friends and yeah. work together to stop bank fraud because, anyway, it's a really, really good movie. And Leo DiCaprio.
Scorsese?
Spielberg.
Spielberg. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spielberg.
And Leo DiCaprio, that movie came out in 2002.
Yeah.
And this is like Leo as a kid. I mean, not a kid, but like as a
yeah.
kid still,
young man.
Fresh off of Titanic.
Yep.
Like, and then he's in this movie opposite Tom Hanks, and it's like, holy shit, dude. Yeah. Both these guys are phenomenal in this movie. And then, like, Christopher Walken's in it. And then Amy
now,
Adams is in
where
it.
Did you see
and
it?
Then Martin Sheen is in it. Mm-hmm. And then it's on the movie. We share, like, a Movies Anywhere account with my whole family, basically. So if you get
okay.
a digital copy, it goes into the folder.
That
and
was
so,
on
so,
Netflix for a while.
So somebody too. Bought it. I think my brother bought it.
Right on.
And,
yeah, she had access to it.
Yeah.
Watched it. Right on.
Because I opened up the Movies Anywhere, and I was like, ooh, Catch Me If You Can. Like, yeah.
I've been wanting to watch that.
I was like, that's so good. She's like, I've never seen it. And I was like, click. Like, I didn't even ask. I didn't
done.
Even ask. And then at the end of it, she's like, that was really good. And I was like, when have I made you, quote unquote, watch a movie that hasn't been at least enjoyable?
Yep.
You're right. I'm like, I know.
Like, I can't get my wife to watch
wallow
a movie.
In your
like,
own.
Really?
I can't, like, yeah. I like, you'd really like this movie. And then as soon as I say it, I'm like, oh, that's the kiss.
You
of
just
death.
Don't say it. Just push play. What's
she,
this?
Yeah, she, yeah.
What's won't. This? What? I don't know.
She's like, all right, I'm going to the other room. Like, I just want you to watch. Like, I've been wanting her to watch the Netflix movie, the
Always Be My Maybe.
Yeah, Always Be My Maybe. Like, babe, you need to watch this. You need to watch this. But, oh, I'm tired. I'm like, God damn it.
Watch the movie. Is TV time like a thing that you guys do, or just no?
Not as much.
Yeah,
yeah. We don't like not together very very much. You know, like like. It's yeah, like we do watch stuff. Like we watch.
Is that a clip you're gonna save for later?
No, it's just dumb.
We watch like a MasterChef.
Oh yeah,
you know. So we watch
yeah.
that together.
Short stuff that you can
yeah
digest.
But like
easily.
About yeah movies, she doesn't usually want to watch a movie. Like she just doesn't want to watch a movie.
Right.
So like,
it's just an extra hour instead of a TV show.
Yeah.
But yeah.
True.
Or like Black Mirror. I like want to like watch this Black Mirror. And
I was basically watching a freaking movie.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
A short movie.
True story. It's good times.
I watched Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Beating a Dead Horse.
So you didn't like it, huh?
That's not what it's called, but it is what it should be called.
I did see that on HBO, and so I was like, maybe I'll watch this.
Is it no good?
You know, it's fine. So the Harry Potter movies kind of all have the same formula, uh-huh. right? Where nothing's really happening. Huge reveal, crazy things are happening.
Right.
Movie's over.
Right.
And, you know, the first seven or eight movies,
the Harry Potter proper.
Like, the Harry Potter proper movies, they work fine in this formula because the characters are interesting.
Right.
And, like, the interactions are interesting. And there are small things that happen here and there throughout the movies. Not so much with this one. Like, yeah,
you saw the other one? The one before this one?
I did. And I don't know how much of this is, I'm just not feeling, like, crazy engaged by any of the acting or the story itself. Or is it the prequel syndrome? So, well, I know everything's going to be okay.
Right.
So I'm not really, like, emotionally invested in any of this danger.
Right.
Like, right. I see Dumbledore on screen, like, oh my God, is Dumbledore going to die? No,
no.
Of course not. Like, of course he's not.
I know what happens.
I know what happens to him. Like, so it's like, is the Wizarding World going to be forever changed? Is this guy going to win and evil's going
to
reign? No, he's not. Like, they're going
to
beat him.
Yeah,
like, that's what's going
to
happen.
Dumbledore's
going
to live. He's going to marry Hermione. And that's
and
how,
it's just mad.
Isn't that what happens?
Yes.
That's okay.
Exactly
how it goes. Exactly
what happens. That's right. Yeah. Dumbledore, that 90-year-old man, marries that 16-year-old girl.
He's got spells.
There's this, like, huge reveal at the end, which you see coming, like, 1,000 miles away. And, like, the music swells because you're supposed to feel things. I'm just like, I just don't fucking care. Like, I just don't care.
Yeah,
and I hate
– I haven't seen
and it. I hate when that happens, when, like, it lines up where, like, here's the big thing, and you're just like
– whatever.
You missed okay. me, guys. That, sorry.
That reminds me.
You're trying real hard.
Since you said music. The music for Rocky is the best movie music of all time.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. it's the best movie. And
strong now.
Yes, that is so good. It's so good. And that I don't get mad they use the same thing.
Yeah,
so good,
dude. The
so
Rocky
good.
Fanfare is epic, man.
So, but okay, this is what's funny. So, in the first three movies, they have these exactly same thing,
like
just rehashed
the running,
a training thing, a training montage. But in Rocky IV,
the best one of all the montages,
it's a training montage essentially.
Best
while
one.
He's driving his Ferrari, he's driving a Ferrari, and he has like a whole big montage about everything. And I'm like, this is not.
That's not in four, is it?
No.
It is, right?
That's not the training montage.
Well, it's not really.
Montage
is
four.
There is
a epic.
Training
when
one.
It's him, like,
yes,
in the snow.
And he's in Russia,
doing
and
his
he's
Rocky
doing his thing.
Thing.
And he's
training
doing
like
thing.
A real man.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. He's gone.
He's like chopping wood, and
man.
Drago's got
right.
the machine.
But there's a montage. It's not training, but it's like it's so like funny because that's what it seems like.
Of course.
And you're like. Well, every other movie, he's like jogging, you know, or running and doing so. He's like driving and playing all the scenes. Yeah, playing all the scenes.
Yeah, it's another one of those flashbacks for sure.
That's funny.
It's good times. I do want to talk about Spider-Man briefly because I saw that. Did you watch anything else?
I watched Spider-Man.
Okay. But what I laughed about earlier was like, I wonder if this is a male-female trope thing.
What's like, that?
So. Does your significant other ask, like, or want you to watch something that they love and want you to love that thing? Or is that, like, a dude thing where it's like, okay, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is the best thing that ever existed, and I love it so much. Please, let's watch it, and oh, my God, you're going
to
love it. And then when they hate it, you're just like, oh, my God, how do you fucking hate
it?
I married somebody that hates turtles. Like, what the fuck is wrong? Like, that's just an example. It's meant to love.
I was
going to
say, you
but like,
from experience.
No. But, like, do you have that thing where you're like, oh, my God, trying to get Andrea to watch anything, and you're just like, come on, just watch it.
No, she watches like, all the stuff that's, like broadcast news
right.
that, like, I really want her to watch. And there's a lot of movies that she's watched that I'm crazy about that I really want her to see. But generally, when it's a newer one that I'm like, oh, this is really good, you should watch it. Say goodnight. Like
it.
Forget it. Like, that's never going to happen.
But you want that. I wonder why. It's because, like, you love it so much and you want to spread the
you
joy.
Share the love. Yeah. I enjoyed this thing very much, and I want to bring you enjoyment.
But then you get upset if they don't like it. Like, why do you take it personal? Because
then you feel judged.
Well, like, she wanted, like, she knew I never watched Birdcage.
Okay.
And so she put it on. Boom. Watch this.
Right.
And
but it's like that. It's
it was
like,
okay.
We'll put it on. Like, when what
she's
was
like,
it?
You said you never watched this before, and clearly she really enjoys it.
Right.
So I'm like, we're gonna watch it because we don't watch very many things together. So let's watch it. Let's watch it.
And
so,
Lindsay has exactly two movies that she's really excited to watch, and we watch these movies every year because they're holiday movies. Okay. And it's one of them is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving.
That's
perfect.
Our Thanksgiving tradition, and Christmas Vacation is a Christmas tradition.
Excellent.
And I already love both of those movies.
Choices. I thought you were going to say but Love Actually. And like, you hate Love Actually.
Because yep, we watched that together for the first time. We're like, what is this hot garbage?
It's good.
It is good. Like, I don't know. I like it.
But no, she didn't. Like, when she first brought up watching Planes and Trains, she's like, oh, I was like, have you seen this movie? It wasn't like a, you have to see this. It's the greatest thing.
Right.
It's like, oh, have you seen this? And like, oh. It's like, it's a very casual thing coming from her. And for my part, like, I watch everything there is under the sun that's worth watching. Right. I think anyway, or right. I try to. So it's, I do come from that place of, this is great, you need to watch it.
Right, me too.
But I don't really push too hard. The only thing I've ever pushed really hard for was Avatar The Last Airbender.
Okay.
Because it's a cartoon. I was like, she might say no to watching this. I was like, you need to watch this. It's easily one of the best television shows ever made, animated or otherwise. And she's like, really? And I'm like, I'm that serious about this show. It's
Did
that
she like
good.
It?
She loves it.
Okay.
At least you think she does. I mean,
she knew better.
If she doesn't, if she doesn't love it, she's faking it real good because we rewatch that show in its entirety every
fantastic.
Year. So
no, it's just funny, like the way that the men and women treat pop culture.
That is funny,
and it reminds like even in How I Met Your Mother, he like tries to show one of his girlfriends
never
Star
seen
Wars,
Field of Dreams.
Or he like tries to show Star Wars or something, and it's like, you've never seen Star Wars, and he like puts together this whole evening of like, he's got the popcorn, he's got this, and then he puts the movie, and she like checks her phone. He's like, are you checking your phone? Like in his mind, he hears, and is she checking her phone in the middle of Star Wars? Like, it's so accurate. It's funny.
Oh yeah,
it's so funny. This just makes me laugh.
That's fantastic.
So you have not seen Spider-Man?
I have not, but I know that I'm not going to until it's streaming. So
you should try.
You should.
I see this movie.
It's real good
on a large screen.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I will.
Yes.
We spent $27.40 to get into the movies last night.
We spent $13.40.
And the only reason we went is because we had Regal gift cards to spend.
As I say, I have an AMC card that's sitting in my wallet right now. So
$27.40. That's like $14 a ticket, basically.
That's pretty...
Which is outrageous.
That's a lot.
And now when there's a preview, like Regal Unlimited, $23.50. See whatever you want, however many times you want, whatever. So they're doing...
A month.
Yeah.
The subscription thing. Yeah.
But theirs is you can see any movie anytime.
That's
like
cool.
You're not limited to three a week or whatever. And so like, but it's like there was seven people in the theater last night to see Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie, I mean, it's been out for a month, which is, I guess, understandable, but still it's a movie. And we went at 9 o'clock, which isn't too late. No, 8 o'clock. We went at 8 o'clock,
that's
which
not
is not
right.
late.
It is a school night.
And there's nobody there. It's like no one goes to the movies.
Conversely,
it's opening night.
I went on $5 Tuesday.
Yeah.
And that theater was full.
It's got to be awesome with the full theater.
It was.
Yeah.
And that's the Ultrastar?
Yeah. Hazard Center.
No, we're just going to go across the street to Grossmont Center because
it's, right there.
It's $8 for every ticket ever, and they have the big screen and like – it's $8.
Yeah.
So, like, for $16, the price of one ticket, basically, to get into the Regal and the mall, which is a shitty theater anyway.
And Parkway Plaza?
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's the closest Regal, so we had to go there.
I saw the worst movie I've ever seen there.
What was it?
Avatar The Last Airbender. The live action one.
Right.
Terrible.
This movie's real good.
It's
like,
so good.
It starts off, and I was like, oh, no, they're going to ruin it. I was worried at the beginning of the film because it's very goofy and sort of slapsticky, and like it's a different tone than you're expecting from a Marvel movie.
Yeah,
and then it changes into one of the best Marvel movies that's out there.
Easily,
like it's just really good.
I think one of the things that elevates this movie for me above other Marvel movies and just the first Spider-Man had the same quality as that. It just does high school really well.
Yes.
Like, that's cool.
You believe that these are high school students.
Well, and I think that's part of the movie's success is the fact that it's Spider-Man and he has to be Spider-Man. But it's doing what Spider-Man 2 did back in the day, mm-hmm. which is making him go, I don't want to be Spider-Man all the time.
All the time.
Like, I'm a 16-year-old kid in high school, and all I want to do in this moment is tell that girl that I have a crush on that I think she's cute.
Yeah.
And I'm about to go tell her, but now I have
disaster!
To go fight Spider fire senses. Monster. Right. Right. And so it deals with that whole, like, do I want to do this? You know, with great power comes great responsibility nonsense.
Right.
Where that's why people love Spider-Man so much is because he chooses to do good when he knows that his own personal life will suffer for it. And so he always chooses to do the right thing.
Yep.
Where in this one, he legitimately is like, I'm not even going to take my suit with me. And then, like, they come find him. And, like, Aunt May packs it in the bag. And, like, all these
you
things.
You almost,
like,
read with a post-it note. You almost forgot this.
But it's like he's constantly choosing to try and
which
not
which is a great little, like,
Spider-Man.
Sight gag, too, when he's
so good.
That's
when
cool.
You see it.
And it's just, like you said, it does high school very well. And
so
it,
well.
It follows Peter. It's a Peter Parker movie. It's not a Spider-Man mm-hmm. movie. And I think that's what makes it successful.
Yeah.
And Tom Holland is so stinking good.
He's excellent.
Like, he's so good.
Because, yeah, there's more for him to do in this movie than there has been. And then there was in Homecoming than there has been in any of his other appearances. Because now he has to, like, he's not just, I'm reveling in my powers and everything's awesome and cool and fun. But it's, my role model is dead.
Right.
Well, and everyone's looking to me to fill his shoes, and I don't think I'm worthy of that, which is, like, kind of heavy for a 16-year-old kid to be going through.
Well, and it feels like a Spider-Man movie, whereas the first one, if you know the character Spider-Man at all, which everyone does because, like the Nerd On guys pointed out, this is the second Spider-Man movie in the last 10 years or something like that.
Right.
The third
Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny if you think about it. But what they did so well is like in the first one, you're like, it didn't really feel like a Spider-Man movie because if you know Spider-Man, like, he cares about the small stuff. He cares about getting old ladies their bags back. He is the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. In the first movie, he wasn't that because they introduced him in Civil War, where he was part of this
big
world-saving event with the Avengers and stuff that in his first movie, all he cared about was, like, I want to be an Avenger. I'm big and bad. I can do whatever I want. My powers are cool. I'm super strong, blah, blah, blah. I'm an Avenger. And then he fucks up and has to learn whatever.
And gets humbled.
But then in this movie, he literally just saved the fucking world and his father figure again. Let's not forget that just because we didn't see Ben Parker die, that's what happens to Peter Parker.
Yeah.
He loses Ben, his father figure. And now in this movie, Tony Stark is now toast. And so he's just lost his second father figure in about a 2-year span after becoming ridiculously close to this one and, like, going into space and coming back and, like, having all this PTSD trauma stuff that we saw how it affected Tony Stark, who's an adult.
Yeah.
And now you're watching Peter Parker go through it, and he doesn't have the same PTSD, but he has the whole, like, I need a break from this. Like, I'm a kid.
We,
like,
need to slow down.
I need to be.
Last year was kind of a lot.
Right. And so he's looking forward to going to Europe and stuff, and then he gets thrown back into it and, like, has to be Spider-Man again. It's just, it's so captivating to watch that story.
All right.
I'm going to ask a stupid question.
Yeah.
Did you stay to the very end?
I did.
Of course you did.
Which kind of made the rest of the movie make a lot of sense.
So much more sense.
Because I was like, what the hell is it? Like, why is people acting like, why are certain people acting certain ways? And I was like, it didn't make sense. And then it started to make sense.
It was all a dream.
Well,
it was all a dream.
And so, do you know Mysterio? Like, are you familiar with the character?
I'm familiar with Mysterio, yes.
And so I'm familiar with the character. And I was like, they had me going for a minute.
Me too. I'm like,
and I was like, but I know this character, and, like, how is it happening? Because in the comics, like, he's like a, I guess, like, a visual effects artist.
Yeah.
Like, in Hollywood, like, like, or whatever, in the pictures, and so I was
in,
like,
the talkies.
And so I was like, I wonder how this is gonna play out, and, like. And just the fact that it's like, you know, I came from a different world and this and that, and the elementals are coming in. And, like,
I'm like,
this all makes sense. Like, this all kind of adds up. But I'm like, but he's not from a different world. Like, what? And, like, Gyllenhaal is so charming and good and underutilized in most things.
Yeah.
But he has such a wide range, and so you're watching him be this like lovable, likable guy, and you're mm-hmm. like, aren't you the bad guy? Like,
bad guy.
Aren't you the bad guy? And then he's not, and you're like, wait, what? Like, it's just it's a trip. And then when certain events unfold, it's you're taken aback by a lot of things in this movie. There's a lot of twists and turns that you don't see coming, and it's just really good.
Speaking of not seeing
two thumbs up,
not seeing things coming visually, this movie is impressive.
Yes.
Like some of the visual sequences in this will. You're like, what am I even looking at right now? And it's amazing. It's
right on.
And I've never. It's one of those things because we'll take it back a few years. When Green Lantern first came out, and I was like, cool, like we finally have the technology to like really do this and make it look good. They didn't. Spoiler alert. They did not do that. And when I heard they're going to do Mysterio in this movie, I was like, ooh,
right,
that could look really cool. And it far exceeded.
Yeah, it does.
Any idea that I had of what it might have looked like.
All of it looks really cool.
Insane.
And when he's like the part when Spider-Man like jumps off the building.
Yeah.
And he's like falling, and then he hits the ground immediately. You're like, wait, what? Oh, wait, weird. Got it. This is bizarre. Like it's good. And then like all the side characters. Like I almost felt like there was one too many jokes. But looking back on it, I don't think
they were so good.
There were a lot of good jokes.
We're dating now.
And poor Martin Starr with his old ass camera. And then he catches it, and you're like,
which was agonizing for me. I'm like, no. Oh, he saved it. Okay. Yeah. Oh, no.
I highly recommend it, dude.
The deft visual comedy of like making a joke last just a little bit longer than it should, but like the exact amount of time that it should last where it stops being funny. But then it gets really funny. When it lands.
You just have to make it through the first, 30 minutes. No, because there was just a few parts where at the beginning of the film.
It's pretty dour.
I thought it was pretty slapsticky goofball. Too much. Like, I laughed when he hit his head on the bell. Bong.
Yeah.
And like he gets back up and hits his head again. Bong. And I'm like, I laughed, but I was like, come on. You guys are better than this. But like, I was thinking about it and like. Just say you're going through and you're rewatching these movies again for the 18,000th time.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch Endgame, you're going from Endgame into this,
mm-hmm.
and it makes sense for this to be lighthearted at the beginning because you just watched the horrificness of Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's good. You should go see it.
Okay.
That's all.
Do it.
Anybody, anything else? We done?
The one little thing.
Yeah.
Because I think we were talking about it before. As part of this Epics free weekend, I got to watch Minority Report again.
Yeah.
Now, if you remember, I was not a fan.
Which is back in the day. Mm-hmm. Which is wrong.
I got to stand by it. Like, after watching it again, I was like, there's a couple things, and I'm going to tell you, and you tell me if you don't think this is an accurate observation of it.
Okay.
So there's a scene where Tom Cruise, like, all of a sudden he's like, I gotta run. He's like running.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on the,
it's part of his contract.
It is. He's gotta jump, he's gotta fight, he's gotta take his shirt off. They're on the cars and he's jumping from car to car as they're going down vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this whole chase scene with the guys who are trying to get him.
Is this when he has the precog girl with him? Or?
No, before that. Before that.
This is right when he sees his own thing pop up.
Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he ends up jumping on one of the guys with the jetpack and like, and it's kind of cool and they like escape. But that whole scene is so like slapsticky in a way. And then they like bust into the apartment and they're cooking burgers and the jet, like, sears the burgers as it goes over it, you know, and you're like, oh, and then they like bust into this other window where the kid's playing the sax, beep, 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 and it looks like Animal House or something, you know, where the girl gets thrown in from the window. And so it's really out of place, like, with the rest of the movie is real
very
dark.
Serious and dark, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like, what? I think that I remember seeing that in the theater, and I think that kind of threw me all off out of whack a little bit, like, it's this kind of movie. Now it's kind of a serious movie. Now I'm kind of bored. And so anyway, it was cool. I dug the purchased realities that people would buy, you know, that part was kind of fun to watch, where it was like, no, you're the man, no, you're the man, you know, and they're like in these different scenarios. But anyway,
well,
it was okay.
The story's good too, and James Cromwell's
story was
kind of
cool.
Like, yeah.
The story's kind of cool, but it goes on, and then it's like a little extra twist, and then an extra twist, and yeah. So I'm like meh on Minority Report. So.
Yeah.
But
it's okay. I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Hey, you know what? I like Love Actually too. So you know,
yeah.
So.
We all like what we like, yep, and we like what we like.
Yep.
But for now, tell us what you like by sending us an email at lifesabinge@gmail.com. Or call the voicemail line at 619-438-0532. This has been Life's Been... No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
He's still going.
And good night.
But let's get out of my garage. So thank you out there for listening to the show. This has been Life's a Binge. I'm Jared.
I'm BJ.
I'm Rich.
And we'll see you on the couch.
Life's a Binge! Bow, 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 bow,
bow. Right?
This has been a Life's a Binge production. Be sure and leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you find the show. You can find us on all social media at Life's a Binge. Send us an email at lifesabinge@gmail.com. Join the phone army by dialing 619-438-0532. And if all else fails, check out our website at lifesabinge.com. Thanks for listening, and as always, we'll see you on the couch.
What could I do? Okay, all right.